all of our communication, the goal is for us to express ourselves, to understand others. It's all about how we're interacting with each other. After a brain injury, people can notice a change in relationships with family, friends. It can affect work and can affect school. So social communication is certainly an area that is a huge priority that I think often too comes more as an afterthought. And maybe that's because it starts coming up when you're, quote, well enough to like get back into doing things, and maybe other parts have fallen into place and social communication starts to arise as a concern.
There is always hope, and you are not alone.
Hi, I'm Christabel Braden, and this is my brain injury podcast, Hope Survives. Here we share information, education, and support for the brain injury community. This is an uplifting podcast to bring hope to your darkest days. As a survivor of traumatic brain injury and multiple concussions, I know what it's like to struggle to find hope. I don't want anyone to feel as alone as I did, and that's why I started my online community called Hope After Head Injury. This podcast is an extension of that, and I'd love to invite you to join along as we explore the realities of life with brain injury, with messages of encouragement, interviews with doctors and professionals, and survivor stories. No matter where you're at on your journey, there is always hope. With a little hope, you can make it through today. With a little faith, someday you'll get through the pain. Just a little love is enough to light the way through your darkest night. Hope survives. A little faith and love. Hope survives.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Hope Survives Podcast. Today's topic is one I'm so excited about because social communication and relationships after brain injury is probably one of the topics that has affected me personally the most. Well, I hesitate to say the most because I guess every symptom and every aspect of brain injury is important, but this one affects you kind of emotionally. And it affects how you interact with other people. I really struggled with social cues after my TBI. And even to this day, there are still things that I'm working on. So today's conversation with Catherine Noyce, who is a speech-language pathologist, is all about how do we deal with relationships when we're having breakdowns in communication related to our brain injuries. And you might be going into this thinking, you know, well, maybe I can relate, maybe I can't. I just kind of want to learn more. Or you might be going into this thinking, I'm having a lot of issues with the people around me. And I hope that whatever you're coming at this episode with, that there is value and there is something that can help you and encourage you. We talk about friends, we talk about dating. We talk about dating a lot. We talk about coworkers, we talk about family, and we talk about different breakdowns in communication that can happen, whether nonverbal cues, those are some of the harder ones to see after brain injury, tone, both interpreting it from other people, or your outgoing tone of yourself, maybe not having self-awareness of how you sound, how you interpret body language. We talk about digital communication aspects such as Zoom and texting and social media. We talk about interrupting, repeating yourself, memory loss, and provide hopefully some encouragement. And if anything, to know you're not alone and there's help with these things. You know, it's hard when you feel like you are constantly being misunderstood by the people around you and you can't say what you want to say. Now, this is the second time that Catherine has been on the podcast. Our last episode was number 55, called Communication and Cognition After Brain Injury. Today's episode, we focus a lot more on the relationship aspects. And we did not talk as much about aphasia and word finding because our last episode, we focused a lot on that. Today's episode is more about how it affects our relationships and how it affects other people. So if you listen to this and you're like, wow, this was helpful. If you haven't yet heard episode 55, definitely go back and listen to that one, because on that episode, we talk a lot more about word finding and forming ideas and expressing ourselves and some of those cognitive aspects of communication. Today's episode is about social aspects of communication. So yeah, I share a little bit of my own dating experiences with a brain injury and some bad experiences, some good experiences. But overall, I just hope that you know that if you're struggling in this area, you're not alone. And if you are a family member listening to this, wanting to help your loved one, thank you so much for being here. It is only going to help the more that we can understand each other and the more that you can learn about brain injury and how it presents, because it's invisible, right? We can't see it on the outside. That's one of the hard parts about it. So thank you guys for listening, and let's keep going in today's episode. I started Hope After Head Injury 10 years ago, and it has grown into a global online support community. You can get involved and check out more of the online resources we have available at hopeafterheadinjury.com. Connect with survivors, caregivers, and family members through our Zoom meetings, our Facebook support group, or the Brain Injury Bible Study group. I remember what it's like to feel so alone with brain injury, and my goal with these groups is for you to know that you are not alone and to be able to connect with others going through similar circumstances. We are in this together. Now, I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and remind you that this podcast is for education and informational purposes only and not intended for medical advice. If you need specific medical advice, please consult your physician. Now, thanks for listening, and let's get on with the show. Today, we are back with Catherine Noyes, who you might have previously heard on episode number 55. In that episode, it was entitled Communication and Cognition After Brain Injury. And in that episode, which if you haven't heard it, definitely go back and listen, number 55, because we talk about communication after brain injury and some of the difficulties with it and some tips on how to make it better. And we slightly touched on the idea of social communication in that episode. And so I asked Catherine to come back today to do a whole episode on social communication and social cues after brain injury, because it's important. So welcome back, Catherine.
Hi, Christabel. Thank you so much for having me back on the podcast.
I'm so glad that you decided to say yes to come back and have this conversation, because it's really important. This is a topic that affects us in pretty much every capacity, our relationships, you know, how we read social situations, how that changes after brain injury, how we're able to connect with others. You know, it's probably, I think, one of the hardest areas for survivors is their relationships with other people after their injury.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. After a brain injury, people can notice a change in relationships with family, friends. It can affect work and can affect school. So social communication is certainly an area that is a huge priority that I think often too comes more as an afterthought. And maybe that's because it starts coming up when you're, quote, well enough to like get back into doing things, and maybe other parts have fallen into place and social communication starts to arise as a concern. And it's funny because I was actually talking about this with my husband. I mentioned I was coming back on your podcast to talk about social communication, and he was like, well, what communication isn't social? And I was trying to see if I could think of some examples, but it is true that almost it's kind of redundant to say social communication, because all of our communication, the goal is for us to express ourselves, to understand others. It's all about us and our partner and how we're interacting with each other. So really, I think all communication is social communication.
Yeah, that's so good. So before we dive into the conversation, because it's going to be good, I can tell, can you introduce yourself, a little bit of your background and education for our listeners?
Sure. So again, I'm Catherine Noyce. I am a speech language pathologist. I'm a certified brain injury specialist, and I'm also a yoga teacher. I've been practicing since 2011. I live in Maine with my family, and I've worked in a number of different settings, but I started my own private practice called Lotus Speech and Wellness with the goal of really focusing in on helping people with brain injury improve communication, cognition, and mind-body wellness. And I offer my services to residents of Maine through teletherapy. Maine is a very large state and people are spread all over. And so it's a great way to provide accessible services to folks.
That's great. Wonderful. So as a speech language pathologist, in our last episode, you talked about how SLP is about a lot more than what people might think, that it is related to cognition and related to how we communicate. So you want to talk a little bit about your background as an SLP and how that helps you to help patients navigate communication?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think often, even more often, people just call us speech therapists instead of even a speech language pathologist. And so I think people's first inclination is to think that we only help with how someone says their sounds. So if they're not fluent, like they're stuttering or things that are more of that nature, sometimes people also will think initially of, oh, if I can't think of a word I want to say, if it's at the tip of my tongue, but I can't get it out. But it is so much more than that. Like you mentioned, there's this whole cognitive piece of communication, which is, can we focus on what we're trying to say? Can I remember the things that I wanted to say to someone, or that, you know, I had this great conversation with someone even just 5 minutes ago, and now I'm having trouble remembering what we were talking about? There's executive function as part of communication. Can I be organized in how I'm communicating? Can I inhibit some of the comments that I might want to say? And so as a speech and language pathologist, we think about how all of these different language, cognitive, speech pieces interact for, which again, ultimately is our social communication. And it's with family, friends, again, work, school, social media, right? That's a big one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. So, all right. The reason that I have been wanting to talk about this, and when I say social cues and social communication, I think I'm generally thinking about friends and relationships, maybe romantic relationships, maybe friendships, you know, situations outside of a practitioner or a therapist, or outside of, you know, maybe, I guess family should be included as well. But I remember I had a lot of issues with reading social cues. I really struggled with tone. I really struggled with nonverbal. I really struggled with subtext and understanding context for when somebody said something. And so with my family, I felt that, you know, they were with me all the time. And, you know, your closest caregiver, I mean, they might understand your quirks and your nuances of, like, you know, your injury and how it affects you. But, you know, a friend that you don't see very often or doesn't see you very often isn't always going to pick up on those things. So I would have issues both going out and coming in. I struggled with my own tone. I struggled with being able to communicate what I was trying to say without maybe coming across as harsh or no filter or rude. But then on the flip side, I would misinterpret what other people were saying quite often, or it would just completely go over my head. And so, you know, this has been a long battle for me. Over time, like, my mom would talk me through a lot of different social situations, and I would have social faux pas, and I would kind of have to learn by doing over the years. But so let's just break it down. Like, what are some difficulties that you see brain injury patients as struggling with when it comes to social cues? What are some common issues?
Yeah, I think you touched on some key ones, which are the nonverbals. And by nonverbal, you mentioned tone. And that is more of the, instead of the what you're saying, it's the how you're saying it. The tone of voice, the speed at which you say it, the volume at which you say it, your facial expression when you're saying things, your body language, whether you're facing someone, whether you're not, eye contact. So I think you're so right that it's, the nonverbals are such a big part. And exactly like you said, it's not only that, it's on both ends, right? The giving and the receiving. So how you're doing with those nonverbal cues and how you're interpreting, or maybe rather like missing, other people's nonverbal cues.
I mean, what's some examples? How would you help somebody with that? Let's just start with the nonverbal side.
Yeah. So I guess, so there's the two sides of it, right? So let's say that you have this sense, or maybe someone's told you that you are the one having breakdowns in those areas. I think part of the process involves some self-reflection. And you might be able to, right after a conversation, think about, okay, how did that go? How did I do? What went well? What was my goal for that interaction? And did I meet that goal or did I fall short? Maybe you have a trusted family member or friend that you can ask and say, hey, how did I do in that interaction? Maybe, you know, I've worked with people where we've done some role play. So if you have that opportunity, it doesn't necessarily have to be with a speech therapist. Again, I think usually after a brain injury, it becomes clear who your trusted family and friends and support system are. So maybe you do some role play and maybe you even go crazy and videotape it so that you can watch and see how you're doing. Maybe you never notice that your face is more flat than it used to be. Like maybe you're just not quite as expressive. You used to be a super smiley person, and because of the brain injury, you just look a little bit less expressive. And to someone who's used to talking to you, like you mentioned, maybe there's a friend you haven't seen as often. And maybe if you're not as expressive in the same way, they might think something's off. Because again, it's these subtle nuances with social communication that people pick up on. So I think that's part, you know, if you're the person who's experiencing breakdowns, if you're having trouble interpreting other people's nonverbals, that's where, you know, you really can try to reteach and again, identify what are my goals here? What are the things I should be looking for? You know, I think one thing that can happen after brain injury, one thing I hear is people will suddenly say, oh, am I talking too much? And they've been going on, and their turn has gotten much longer than their partner's turn. And usually the partner might be hesitant to say like, hey, why are you still talking? Or maybe they're trying to get a word in and they can't. Maybe we can teach you to look at their nonverbal cues to get a sense of, have I been going on too long? Like maybe are they starting to lean in? Like they have something that they want to say. Maybe are they starting to gloss over a little bit? Maybe are they starting to look at their phone or look away? So there are, like, how can we use those clues to help us as well?
Yeah, that's such a good example of like talking too much. And I would also find that difficulties in cognition can also cause some of those issues in communication, because a lot of times I would repeat myself over and over again. And I didn't realize this, but the other person would interpret it as me thinking that they didn't understand what I was saying. And I had to learn how to explain to people like, hey, if I repeat myself, it's not because I think you're dumb. It's not because I think you don't understand it. It's because I have to verbalize this for some reason. I have to verbalize the same thing, you know, like I had a friend say, like, you just said the same thing three different ways. Like sometimes I have to understand like what I'm trying to say. And I've had to learn how to become a little bit more aware of that. And over time, like I think as, you know, the inflammation has calmed, as my brain has been healing over the years, it's improved. But if I'm like really tired, I'll still have times that I repeat myself too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think, like you had mentioned before and are mentioning now, that cognitive piece is so interwoven. I mean, like you said, maybe it's about how you're organizing your thoughts or like sequencing a story to make sense. I think though that what you're doing is a really great way of handling it if you're comfortable doing so, which is kind of, it's essentially advocating for yourself and educating people. Because again, I think this brings us back to the idea that social communication implies that there's a partner or partners in the communication. Another thing that speech language pathologists are talking about a lot is that we can't just help the person with the brain injury because there is another person or people involved. So the communication partner really needs to be aware and have, I think that awareness then helps them support you in conversation as well.
Yeah, that's so good. And, you know, we talk about like verbal, nonverbal, and I think tone is a big thing because, and subtext, like facial expressions. I found myself in a really bad abusive relationship. And part of the issue was I just believed every word that he said. And I didn't pick up on, oh, this guy might be lying to me. Like, it just didn't cross my mind that somebody could just look at me and lie. And everything he had said was a lie, right? So I ended up in this really dangerous situation. And even before that, you know, guys that I had dated, they were toxic relationships. And I didn't recognize always that what somebody says to me, just the words, is less important than how they say it. And, you know, what's behind and what's the intention of why they're saying what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, romantic relationships is like a whole other thing because it's really hard to discern somebody's intention when you're trying to get to know them, especially as a survivor. So what advice would you have for people in that area?
Yeah, that's a big one. And I think I'd mentioned social media too. And I know that for a lot of people now, that's huge. And social media often, it's completely missing so many of those extra like pieces and context clues that we have when we're face to face with someone. And I think that adds this whole other layer. So, you know, we could certainly go there.
Let's talk about that next.
I mean, I think it's a really hard situation. I think that after brain injury, we hear a lot that people feel like their relationships are affected and you want to find those people that you trust. And having breakdowns in your ability to communicate, again, it's understanding others and expressing yourself, can certainly have an impact on a romantic relationship. And so I think the scenario that you're talking about is really hard because it was just the two of you and you were taking things at face value and trusting this person, which, you know, by nature of the type of relationship it was, like that was the appropriate thing to do. And that's really hard. I think that in hindsight, maybe you wish that you had like had some friends, you know, observe what was going on. And I think that that's a potential strategy, right? If you think there might not be something right, you're not in this alone. Find someone else who's trusted that you can talk about the situation, maybe have them join the group and see what's going on. So
that's so good. Being aware of some of your deficits maybe in this area, because if you're not aware of them, you don't know to bring other people in on it. So like since then, like whenever there's been a guy I've been interested in or like romantically, I've always made sure that pretty early on, my family and my friends have gotten to meet him. And things have gone better because I knew that I couldn't fully trust my own self in that. And I've also been in trauma therapy because of some of that stuff too. And that's another side of it. But one of the main issues was that most of our communication was over texting. And when you're texting with someone, it is, you know, you don't have any other context. And that's today's world that mm-hmm. we live in. A lot of people are meeting people on dating apps or they're texting or they're talking on Instagram or Facebook. And you lose some of those social things. So if you're already struggling with like social communication and then like pretty much all your communication is texting, I'm always telling my friends or like advising people that I talk to, like, hey, if you're interested in dating someone, like get in person. Do not get emotionally attached through texting because they could be a totally different person in real life than they could be over texting or even over the phone. They could be a totally different person. And so like it's so important to get to know your their family. You get them to get to know yours. You get to know their friends, them get to know your friends before you make a commitment to like be in a relationship with them.
That's a really good point. Yeah. And I think on the other end too, you probably can do better at being your best self if you're in person face to face too, because there's pieces that are lost on your side of things, or maybe if you have less inhibition and you're sending things before you really thought about how it might come off, right? Like taking that other person's perspective of whether you use caps or not. Like there's these subtle things that I am not even up to date with that can really carry these big meanings when you're relying on text or social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, all relationships are social. So, you know, we talk about like dating relationships, friendship relationships, coworkers even, right. You know, emails, a lot. So much of our communication is online nowadays or on Zoom or on the phone. And that's even slightly different than in person. So what advice would you have for a survivor on just navigating like digital communication in general?
Oh, that's a big question.
I know.
Oh, man. Well, digital communication, there's so many things that can go under it. I mean, I think speaking of like Zoom, because that's something that we are all dealing with, this is a weird one, but eye contact is important. As I mentioned that I'm doing just teletherapy with my clients, and I certainly do a lot of Zoom meetings with other folks and FaceTime with family, but you can still like have a sense if someone is looking at you or not. So I think when you are doing Zoom, trying to show that you're, I think it's easy to tell if you're looking at the person or like doing other work on the side. So that's one tip that I have with teletherapy and doing Zoom. I think you mentioned like within a professional setting and coworkers. And I think something that we have to think about too is professional settings. There's like the coworker who's a friend. There's the coworker who's just like a acquaintance who's a peer. You've got a boss who's above you. And how has that changed a relationship? You've got the people maybe who you manage. So there's, like you mentioned before, this idea of context and how relationships are. So being aware of all of that. For other digital communication, I mean, you already talked about texting. I think some advice that I would have is to think before you send. That's a big one. So, you know, maybe you type it out again. Feel free to have a trusted partner check it out for you before you send. And I'm not saying like every text you send has to be checked by someone and read and reread. Like you don't want to drive ourselves crazy. But before you send a text, think about, is this what I meant to say? And how might that person perceive it too? Let's see, social media. We already touched on that, but just being aware that you are losing something. And with social media too, I think sometimes people with a brain injury are feeling more socially isolated, and they go on social media, and of course everyone's putting their best face forward, and that can make people feel more isolated as well. So gosh, again, like there's so many things we could talk about with digital media and advice, but I think just having that awareness that it's not the same as in-person communication, seeking support as needed, and I think thinking before you post, text.
Yeah, that's good. And I think advocating for yourself in your friendships, like if somebody's a close friend of yours, they should know about your brain injury. If you consider someone a close friend, that should be someone that you feel comfortable talking to about it. And, you know, we have different, I don't want to say levels of friends, but different circles of friends. You know, not everyone is going to be your close, close friend. You'll have, you know, acquaintances. You'll have like people you might consider friends. Like maybe you go to church with them, but you don't really know them that well. But you're always friendly when you see each other and you care about them. But like, but then you have like your close circle that like you talk to about the hard stuff that's, you know, there for you. And you might have your family or your significant other as like your inner circle. So I think if anyone's, you know, there's the family and significant other, and but then like right outside of that, you know, your close friend circle, those should be people that you do feel comfortable talking to about your brain injury and advocating. And then outside of that, sometimes you have to be okay with people misunderstanding you. And, you know, it just is what it is. But your closer friends, you know, I have a good friend that lives far away. So pretty much all of our communication is digital. And I was thinking about that because when you were talking about texting and all that stuff, we did a semester of college together. So when I first met her, like I got to know her really well. And then we've been, you know, friends ever since. But all of our contact is phone calls and texts because she lives in Canada. So she's pretty far. And so there are times that I forget to answer her. There's been a lot of times that I've forgotten to answer her. And she used to get really mad and she used to get really upset. And I don't know if mad's the right word, but, you know, just like hurt and feeling like she didn't matter to me, or like she was always the one reaching out, or like, you know, and that's true. And that's probably why our friendship has sustained. But, you know, as a brain injury survivor, like, it's not that I didn't care about her. It's just that sometimes I didn't have any extra energy to think about calling somebody or sending somebody a text. And so we've had to walk this tension balance of explaining about my brain injury when I've gotten re-injuries or different things. And so now she knows me well enough to know, oh, if she doesn't answer me, it's not personal. Mm-hmm. But it took a couple years to get there of us having to communicate back and forth. And, you know, sometimes on texting or on the phone, like you don't always fully get the full social context. And so, you know, I would get offended and hurt and feel like she didn't listen to me and she didn't care about my brain injury and that she shouldn't be taking this so personally. Why is she taking it personally? Like I told her I didn't mean it like that, you know? And so we went through our fair share of difficulties, but you know, our friendship is strong now, but it took time of having to talk through these things and her and me realizing she wasn't trying to not listen or not understand about my injury. She just cared about me and wanted, you know, our friendship to sustain and wanted to feel like it was two-way street. Whereas I'm on the other hand going like, I'm barely surviving through the day. Like sometimes I don't answer, but it doesn't mean I don't care. Or I get like the time blindness where like I don't realize a month has passed since we've talked. And, you know, she's feeling like I haven't heard from her in a month. She must not care about me. And so we had to walk that fine line.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that when someone has a brain injury, they're not the only person who are affected either, right? Like your family is affected, your friends are affected, and they have this social relationship with someone who might be a little different. And, you know, you've certainly talked about that a lot on your podcast. And I think you've talked with caregivers and family members as well. And I think it's an important point to make too, is that for your friend, she was also trying to come to terms with like, what is my relationship now? Right. And it had changed a little bit. And I think as a speech and language pathologist, whose role is to coach family or friends or other caregivers, what we would say to that person is we would coach them into how to be a supportive communicator, right? So trying to help people through their communication breakdown. So your example of like, I'm forgetting to text back, right? Like that's one. And so coaching her, educating her about brain injury and just saying, you know, if you just, I know it feels like, oh, why do I have to do this maybe? But just send Christabel a little message because she probably just forgot and would love to continue the conversation that you're having. But because of her brain injury, that's more difficult for her. I bet if you sent her a text and say, hey, just checking in, she'll reply and say, oh, thank you so much for messaging me. I meant to respond, right? And so I think, again, that's why there's so much value in working with, finding these great trusted communication partners and then helping them to develop skills too, to support you.
Yeah, that's good. Cause yeah, it is, it goes both ways. I think also like advocating for, you know, if I say things in a certain way or like it sounds like I'm shouting, like I don't get aware of my tone always. Because my mom is like, oh, it's been so many years. Christabel, you're talking too loud. Like, and it was even yesterday. And it's like, sometimes I don't realize like my volume. I'm just not aware of my volume. I still struggle with that to this day of self-awareness of that. So it's like, and that's part of communication because someone might feel like you're yelling at them when you're just trying to say what you're saying. And, you know, if you're having sensory overload, you know, for me, it often happens when I have light sensitivity or noise or like I'm starting to get overwhelmed. I bring up my volume. Not that it makes a difference, but like it's like I'm trying to quiet out the noise in my head with what I'm saying so that I can concentrate on what I'm trying to say. But then it ends up that I'm like shouting it, which is not helpful to the other person because then they're like, why is she yelling at me? Because they don't know all that stuff that's going on inside my head.
Right. And so they're also negotiating the like social norms of like, should I say something? Like, I don't want to offend Christabel, but like, here's a question for you. Would you rather know that you were yelling and like risk some embarrassment, but then like have awareness of it? Or would you rather like have everyone save face and just keep going as is?
Yeah, I definitely would rather know at this point. I think earlier on, my mom protected me from that a little bit because I really lacked self-awareness. So I think she had to choose when she said something and when she just let it go. And I think that's part of also educating the caregivers because sometimes it would be helpful to tell me, but if I'm having a breakdown or I'm struggling in other ways, like that might be a little bit too much for me to cognitively process.
Right. That is not the time. And I think that's yet another reason of why working with a speech and language pathologist is helpful in these situations, because working on social communication can be a little awkward because the partner is picking up on the thing, the subtle things that are not going well. I mean, of course, our job again is the speech language pathologist. We help you identify what your strengths are, what's going really well. But also we have to be the ones to do the things that normally wouldn't be socially acceptable, which is to tell you to your face. So I think I noticed you really got off topic. Like we started talking about this and now you're talking about that and then kind of talk you through that. And those sorts of things are A, easier to do with someone who's not like a parent or your best friend usually, and be easier to do outside of the moment. Like what you said, like in the moment, if your mom had been like, and why are you talking so loud anyway? Like that would have just escalated.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have helped the situation. But let's say that you are working with a speech therapist and you get on for your session and they say, you know, how did things go over the past week? And you mention, you know, I've been noticing that I'm having trouble like being aware of how loud my voice is. And then you can work on it in that structured setting and then plan to like practice it outside.
Yeah, that's good. Something else that came to mind is interrupting. So I really struggled with interrupting and it really stemmed from memory loss because I would feel like if I don't say this now, I'm going to lose it. Like I'm not going to remember what I wanted to say. And too many times, you know, you wait for the other person to stop talking and then your thought is gone. And so on Zoom, it's a little bit easier because you can write it down. And so like, that's a method that I use. If I'm on Zoom with somebody or I'm on the phone or I have this, I have little notebooks that I keep, you know, by me so that I can write things down. I always have a notebook by my computer. And so like, then I don't interrupt the person. I use that when I'm recording podcasts sometimes. But when I'm in person with someone, especially if you're just having fun with them or you're doing something and you get relaxed, like you'd find yourself interrupting. And there's this guy that I started dating, that wonderful guy. But I would interrupt him all the time. And he's like, we had to talk through it. And he had to realize, like, look, this is, you interrupt me a lot and it makes me feel like you're not listening to me. And I had to explain, like, if I'm interrupting you, it's not because I don't find value in what you're saying. It's because I really struggle with impulse and I really struggle with memory with my brain injury and it's bad habits that I have. And sometimes, like, if a thought leaves my, like, my reaction time is processing time is a bit slower. So, like, if somebody's talking about something, my brain is pressing and then like the thought leaves my train and then it comes out of my mouth. But like they might have already started to say something else. But like by the time the thought comes out, I'm like, I'm still like a topic behind. And so it just could get a little disjointed. And so he and I had to really talk about it. And he didn't know anything about brain injury before we started dating. And so, you know, I had to educate him on that and it really helped. And so I think it is very important to be self-aware, but also you have to build trust with the people close to you, especially in dating and friendships, because there will be people that will not respect and will not treat you well. And in those cases, break up with them. Like, you know what I mean? Like if they don't respect you and if they like if you've talked through it, his response was, I'm going to try and learn. I want to learn more about brain injury. I'm going to listen to your podcast. Like, you know, he wanted to learn about it. And, you know, we worked through it. But there were other guys that like they just mistreated me or they didn't care. Or they're like, oh, your brain injury is not a big deal. It's whatever. You can't see it. Like you're making too big of a deal out of this. And like, that's toxic. They're not validating what's important to you.
Right.
And with friendships too, I've had friends that I've lost because they really didn't treat me well and we didn't build that trust. And so I think, you know, you talked about how communication's two ways. You have to build trust with people. And they have to be somebody that's trustworthy, that's worthy of your trust. And maybe not every relationship is healthy. And so that's something, you know, maybe seeing a therapist will help you to navigate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think therapists are really helpful in that case, because as we've talked about, relationships can certainly change as a result of a brain injury. And that's not easy to navigate. And so, yeah, I think that's a really great suggestion.
And not just relationship changing, but even new relationships.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So are there any other things related to social communication that you would like to share with our listeners?
I think, you know, if this is something that you want to kind of dive a little deeper into for yourself, maybe just thinking about, you know, what are your current goals for communication? Like who is it that you're wanting to communicate? Where are you communicating them? What are the things that you want to talk about and what's important to you? Like what motivates you? It's okay to think about what's different now than before my injury. I think it's really important to think about strengths and not just the weaknesses. I think, you know, we tend just this human negativity bias to think about what's going wrong. And I think we have probably more talked about things that can go wrong, right, than things that can go well. But make sure you identify all the things that you are doing well. And then think about like, what are the goals, like I said, for yourself, and how can your trusted communication partners help you achieve those goals? You know, give yourself grace. You're not in this alone. And I think just knowing what's meaningful to you, that's a great place to start.
So what are some examples of strengths in communication that you've seen in brain injury survivors?
Oh my gosh, so many, so many. I mean, are you able to, you know, you mentioned like, oh, if I can't like remember everything someone told me, well, we don't have to remember everything. I remember that yesterday I talked with Christabel and we talked about social communication. Maybe I don't remember exactly what, but I'm remembering the gist of it. If you're, think about like attention, I think very common after brain injury, you can have fluctuating attention related to fatigue or whatnot. Well, I noticed that my strength is that I have really good attention in the morning, for example, right? And so that's when I'm going to plan. I'm going to pick to do a coffee date with my friends instead of like a dinner date, because my strength is the morning. That's when I'm able to do things better. And I think also maybe I do better when I'm in person versus texting. And even though people tend to want to text because it's easier, maybe I text once or twice and say, you know, I'd love to either chat about this on the phone or see you in person. So it's identifying the things that tend to work better for you and using that, you know, to your advantage.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think also if you find yourself repeating a lot, I mean, that's something I've struggled with is, well, what's a strength in that? I know what I want to say, even though I'm saying it five times, you know, at least like I have strong opinions and I know what I'm trying to say. I think it is important because we do tend to focus on the struggles. I think it is important to focus on the positives and yeah, surround yourself with trustworthy people and don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah. And maybe laugh at yourself a little bit too, right? Like, I think the bottom line is sometimes these breakdowns in social communication can be awkward, and like an awkward moment so much easier if you and your partner can kind of laugh about it too, you know? So give yourself grace, maybe laugh at yourself that you said something ridiculous or repeated, oh, I just said that again, you know? So
yeah,
I think that makes it all a little bit easier.
Yeah. And I think that's good because sometimes it's easy to get embarrassed. Like if you miss, like I would misinterpret what people were saying a lot and it actually caused me to end up shutting down and like not even wanting to have friends, like, you know, because you would get so, I didn't understand sarcasm. I felt like I was always missing all the jokes. I didn't feel like I was quick enough to keep up with conversations. And so it's hard when you feel like you're just not on the same planet as the people around you. But yeah, working with a speech language pathologist or even, you know, just working through some communication, maybe ask your friend to listen to this episode or the person you're dating to listen to this episode or your family member. Hey, I just listened to this episode. It was really helpful. Can you listen to this? Because I think it'll give us something to talk about. You know, use the tools that are in front of you.
Great suggestion.
So Catherine, if somebody is listening to this, they're like, I need help in this area. What can a speech language pathologist do for them?
So a speech language pathologist is trained to help people with social communication. I think you probably want to try to find a speech language pathologist who specializes in working both with adults, although, you know, you certainly could have a brain injury when you're younger, but someone who specializes in brain injury would be your best bet if you can find that in your area. Most speech language pathologists, even if they work in the school system, have some training around social skills. But I think if you can find someone who specializes in brain injury, they'll better understand how, you know, there is this, with a brain injury, there's an abrupt change that transforms your life versus a developmental social communication breakdown. And a speech language pathologist will help you with some of that self-awareness piece. They'll help identify those strengths and weaknesses. They will talk with you a lot about what are the meaningful situations that you're communicating in, who are the people that are most important that you're talking to. And then we help you set goals and we target those social skills, whether it's verbal, nonverbal, understanding, expressing, cognitive. We probably are going to do some role plays, practicing, and then send you off with, you know, the goal to really do it in the real world. And like I have been mentioning, we will probably invite your communication partners in for a session or two, as long as you're open to that, to train them and educate them about how they can support you with your communication.
And that could be a game changer for you guys. Could be a game changer because, I mean, if there's somebody that's really important to you and you really want the relationship to last, you know, let's say you found somebody that you're dating and you're still in the early stages, but they want to learn about brain injury and they're open to that. And, you know, they want to be a support for you and they're like asking you, how can I help you? Well, here's an example. Let's learn about communication with brain injury together, or a close friend or a family member. It can be really invaluable to invite these people onto your recovery journey with you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Catherine, we always ask on Hope Survives podcast, what are your final words of hope for our listeners?
I think have hope. Social communication can and will get better. Give yourself grace. And if you're thinking about setting goals, again, start with what's most meaningful to you. Who are the most meaningful conversation partners to you? And use your strengths to forge your path forward.
Wonderful. I love that. So if people want to get in touch with you, can you share your Instagram and website?
Yes. So the best way to, or best ways to get in touch with me are to find me on my website, which is lotusslp.com. My email is Catherine@lotusslp.com. And I'm on Instagram @lotus_SLP.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Catherine. This has been such a great conversation. Again, I really, really appreciate you coming on. And I know our listeners got a lot of helpful knowledge from you. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on again, Christabel. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hope Survives podcast. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned as more episodes will be coming each week. And check out hopeafterheadinjury.com for more. I'll see you next time. And remember, there's always hope.